From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
Max Tuckman was looking for an investor, and she thought she'd found the perfect one.
And when we got the term sheet, we realized it was super predatory. And we were like, oh my gosh, like if we take this $500,000 and we don't hit certain milestones in 12 months, we may lose our company.
Max is the CEO and co-founder of Caribou. That is Caribu. If you are a parent, you have heard of Caribou. It is an app that enables you, or well, typically kids and grandparents, to connect by video and then read, draw, and play games together. Back in 2018, Caribou raised $1.3 million from some traditional investors, including Steve Case's Rise of the Rest, and that gave them about 12 to 18 months of runway. So in 2019, Caribou went out to raise more money and extend that runway, which is when they met this great investor. Turns out he wanted to invest $500,000, which was awesome, or seemed awesome.
And when we got the term sheet, we realized it was super predatory. And we were like, oh my gosh, like if we take this $500,000 and we don't hit certain milestones in 12 months, we may lose our company.
This sent Max on a journey. And that journey ultimately led her to discover equity crowdfunding. And as you probably know, equity crowdfunding is literally exactly how it sounds. You're raising money from the crowd, usually small dollar amounts in exchange for small amounts of equity. It sounds simple, but it is not actually simple to do at all, as Max will explain later, because she loves explaining this. Max had a great experience with equity crowdfunding, learned a ton, discovered that a lot of things that people assume about equity crowdfunding was all wrong. And then she became a real advocate for it and spends a lot of time advising other founders on how to do it. Particularly, she is advising founders who are women or people of color, as she is, because she found it to be such a positive alternative to the many landmines of traditional investing. And yes, equity crowdfunding, it has been around for a while. So maybe you're wondering, why exactly are we talking about it right now? The reason is because if this is something you're interested in, now is actually a very important time to take another look, because the rules about equity crowdfunding literally just changed. Among the biggest changes, the government had previously set a limit of $1.07 million, very, very specific. That was the limit that a company could raise through equity crowdfunding, $1.07 million. But now you can raise up to $5 million. And that's just the start.
There's also some other regulation changes that are happening. One is called Test the Water. So before, the SEC wouldn't allow you to talk about your campaign because it's an equity offering. So Test the Water, though, is really great because without making a full commitment, which you used to have to do because the SEC had to approve it, you can test if your crowd is a good crowd for equity crowdfunding, if you can raise the money. So the other thing, all the platforms, the top three platforms already had a way to move everyone into one line item on your cap table, which was probably the biggest pain point for institutional investors because they just didn't want to see 1,000 people on your cap table. All three platforms had a way around it. So that's not like really big news. But the SEC now is allowing for one line item on the cap table, which is a game changer moving forward for any portals that are starting.
As you can tell, Max is very passionate and very knowledgeable about equity crowdfunding. So here is what we are going to do on this episode of Problem Solvers. After this short break, Max is going to tell the story of how she got through her own equity crowdfunding experience, which turns out to be exhausting. I did not realize, I don't think most people understand exactly how much work this is. It's not like Kickstarter. It's not like you just put it up and then hope people give money, which, funny enough, is not actually how good Kickstarters work either, but it's how people think Kickstarters work. Anyway, point is, it's a lot of work. So Max is going to walk through what to know, how to do it well, and what problems to avoid. If you are interested in equity crowdfunding, there is no better crash course than what's coming up next after the break. Are you experiencing slowdown as you work from home because you're sharing your Wi-Fi network with family members? Do you need a separate network or enterprise-level security? The world runs on Wi-Fi, and small businesses and home offices are no exception. More than ever, it's important that your business network delivers the very best performance and unparalleled coverage to keep your teams well-connected, whether they're in the office or working from home. Wi-Fi 6 is the latest in Wi-Fi technology, delivering unmatched speed, coverage, security, and capacity for all your business needs. Netgear's Wi-Fi 6 business solutions, including the latest Wi-Fi 6 access points and the new Orbi Pro Wi-Fi 6 tri-band mesh system, are easy to set up and manage so you can keep your guests connected and your data protected from anywhere, anytime. With business Wi-Fi solutions from Netgear, you can focus on your business, not your IT. Visit netgear.com/Wi-Fi and never worry about Wi-Fi again. That's netgear.com/Wi-Fi. All right, we're back. So on this episode, like I said, we're talking to Max Tuckman, the co-founder and CEO of Caribou, about her experience with equity crowdfunding and everything you need to know about what that experience is like. And, you know, we started this episode by talking about the moment in which Max started to look for some other options. She needed to raise more money, and she had gotten in touch with this investor who seemed really great until the term sheet showed up and it was super predatory. And Max says, look, that can happen to anyone, but it happens to some people more.
I think predatory term sheets, stereotypically, generalization, tend to go to women and people of color more. That's my worry about the world. And investors, a lot of times, just doing their job. We used to say this in the teacher world, right? Unions are just doing their job. And sometimes, like, they can get away with that, right? Because you do have your back against a wall and you do have to take their terms. And look, they're trying to maximize value.
But Max did not want somebody else to maximize value at the expense of her company. And so she walked away from that deal. But then she really needed to raise money, and it was not clear exactly where that money was going to come from. And then, as luck would have it,
I had met a fellow Latina at South by Southwest. I had just presented on a Latina panel, and she came up to me afterwards and she was like, oh my gosh, you need to do equity crowdfunding. Your company is so perfect for equity crowdfunding. And I did the whole, like, you know, hold my nose, like, oh, no, I don't touch that stuff. Like, that sounds scary and weird. And I've heard people have had bad experiences, and it's 1,000 people on your cap table. And she was like, no. She's like, look, I'm Republic. We're one of the top three platforms out there. Trust me, like, it's a great experience. I'll walk you through it. Like, it's very safe for founders and it doesn't mess anything up with investors later on. So again, we were kind of like, interesting. But when we got this term sheet and we realized runway was going to run out, I said, thank God I don't have my back against the wall. I don't have to take this term sheet. Let me go try out equity crowdfunding. So the idea was to raise $500,000, what we were going to get from this guy. And then that was going to get us through the summer. So what a lot of people don't realize is when you're trying to get traditional investors, they don't really fundraise. They're not really around during the holidays, the winter holidays and the summer. And so we were like, oh, this is perfect. We'll just bridge until the fall and we'll go out to traditional investors in the fall and we'll raise kind of the rest of our like C plus there. And we ended up raising $1.7 million. So three times what we were going to get from this guy. And we did it on our own terms. I think that was the freedom that equity crowdfunding gave me, is that in a world without equity crowdfunding, I probably would have had to have taken that. And it would have been expensive capital. And it would have been, I probably would have lost my company because I don't think we hit the traction numbers that we were supposed to. And I'd be another Latina woman founder statistic. And that's why I'm so bullish on equity crowdfunding and why I wanted to talk to you about it and why I wanted your audience to know about it, because I think it is really freeing and is going to give founders a lot more power in the conversation, a lot more leverage.
When we were emailing prior to hopping on this call, you had framed the issue very specifically around this is a great solution. I mean, it could be a solution for anyone, but particularly for women and founders of color because of this statistic that you're bringing up right here. I wonder, because there are so many communities that are so eager to rally behind female entrepreneurs and founders of color, that in fact, equity crowdfunding, it can be more effective if that's where you're coming from, because you're going to reach these people who are so primed to say, I'm excited for this person. I want to get behind this person. I want to see women and people of color succeed as founders. And maybe they're willing to put their money behind it. That's just a hypothesis. Did you see that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think what was really inspiring, and so what I have found from first-time investors, and a lot of times that also equals women and people of color, right, who are getting into angel investing, there are a couple of barriers to entry. One is check size. So a lot of times if you're really early, you're trying to figure it out yourself, your check size isn't attractive to founders sometimes. Then you join an angel group, right? And then you have a 5 or 10,000 check minimum, right? So you can't do the portfolio theory, right? Where maybe you don't want to invest that much across that many companies. And then due diligence would be the other kind of barrier to entry that I found, again, for women and people of color, and also just first-time investors in general. The due diligence of like understanding how to do due diligence on a company and having to do it all on your own. What's so great about equity crowdfunding is that it really lowers that barrier to entry. And so first-time investors, women, people of color, again, these are big generalizations, but the barrier to, and the due diligence has kind of already been done by the platform. It's being done by the crowd, right? Your check size, it can be way smaller. You can take a lot more bets. And we ended up with 30% of our investors with the equity crowdfunding round being women and people of color that we could kind of very quickly see. And for me, I actually would, if I knew that it was a woman or a person of color, I would reach out to them. And I'd say, please change your LinkedIn bio and say you're an angel investor. Say that you're investing in startups, because it's so important that when someone goes and sees someone that looks like you, that they see in your bio that you're investing, right? That it's just a different conversation. Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. So talk to me about the experience of it. How did you do it? I mean, I ask that in that sort of stupid way, because I think people hear, all right, cool, equity crowdfunding. Where's the crowd? And how do I get their money?
So what I learned, because I think a lot of us look at equity crowdfunding and we're like, oh my God, it's like a dating, like an online dating profile, right? Like I just put up a cute picture, everyone swipes right, and I have $1 million in my bank account.
Right, like, or like Kickstarter. It's Kickstarter.
Yeah. No, all of that is untrue. It is such hard work. So I run Equity Crowdfunding Club in Clubhouse, and I do rooms specifically because I want founders to come in and really understand what they're about to embark on, because it is too hard and too long. And it's like, it's work, right? I mean, all fundraising is work. I would say that the way that I would kind of like couch it is equity crowdfunding is like B2C, the B2C of fundraising, and like venture capital is like the B2B fundraising, right? It's like you're going out for less checks and they're bigger. And with equity crowdfunding, you're going for more checks, smaller size, right? So the kind of things that I've learned the hard way was, one, it's not about just putting up a profile and like, you know, just walking away from it. It was, I mean, 20 hours of work a day. Thankfully, I don't sleep to begin with. But if you have a family, people you care about, an animal that relies on you, if you're a company of one, right, you can't run the business and do equity crowdfunding. I mean, it was like from the morning to, you know, I would go to bed at 6 a.m. So I would take a nap between like 6 and 11, and then I would it again. And it was like, I mean, it's marketing, it's social media, it's email lists, it's Facebook ads, it's answering questions on the platform, it's getting press about you, it's being on panels so that you have what I called momentum builder. So every week I made sure that there was something new that I could post on the platform so that investors would see that there was activity, that we were top of mind for them. We ended up, the other thing that I think people don't realize is the importance of, the reason it's called crowdfunding is because you have to have a crowd. The other big mistake I think people make is they think, oh, I'm going to put up a profile and then the platform is going to give me the crowd. Absolutely untrue. So for example, a lot of the platforms will say, oh, we have 1 million investors on our platform, right? And the thing that you need to dig deep into is how many of those investors are going to make a repeat investment. So my tia, right, invested in Caribou. No one is going to extract an investment out of her, right? But she is considered, like no one else, just me, but she is considered an investor on the platform. So you don't get the repeat investors until you show them that you have brought your crowd. It's like friends and family, right? Angels don't want to invest until they see your friends and family have really put in and believed in you, right? And what I found, and these numbers have proven to be pretty true across all campaigns, in the beginning, you know 80% of your investors. And by the end of your campaign, you know about 20%, right? If you've done your job right.
And speaking of doing your job right, I have to do my job right by taking a short break so that we can hear from another sponsor. But when we come back, we are going to dig deeper into exactly what to be doing with all of this time that you're spending on equity crowdfunding, what hard lessons Max learned about what does and doesn't work, and then how to get started if this is something that you're interested in. All coming up after the break. Identity is relevant to everyone and everything. I mean, if you are a consumer, you need to prove your identity at the DMV, or you want to see your personal preferences as you shop online. And if you're an entrepreneur, you want to make sure that you can recognize your user's identity and respond to it without it being a hassle. Now, if you're not an identity expert, that is okay, because Ping Identity is here to help with a great new podcast called Hello User. Ping Identity is the leader in enterprise identity security. In fact, they are the champions of enterprise identity security, and their podcast, Hello User, breaks down identity issues in tangible ways. For example, it talks about how identity is impacted by outside forces like social media and identity theft, and you'll also hear how our digital identities can create our world and influence our experiences. So if you want to understand identity and how it shapes the world we live in, go listen to Hello User. You can find it at pingidentity.com/podcast, ping, that's P-I-N-G, identity.com/podcast, or your preferred listening platform. New episodes are on the second Tuesday of every month. All right, we are back. We are talking with Max Tuckman, CEO and co-founder of Caribou, about equity crowdfunding. And we left off with all the insane amount of work that actually goes into running a campaign, far more than she realized, far more than so many people realized. So when she told me all this, I said, you are spending 20 hours a day. I mean, it sounds like it's a lot of it is just signal boosting, right? You just want to make it, you just want to be in front of as many potential high quality investors as possible. You start with the folks you know, and then you hope that that carries momentum to all the folks that you don't. And how long did this go on for?
So, yeah. So you have, I think, about 5 or 6 months to raise your full goal, right? So you're given a pretty good chunk of time. But it's just like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, which I don't think people realize, again, is it's all about that first day, that first hour, that first week, right? So if you don't crush it, and depends on what the algorithm is. For Kickstarter, I think it's the first 10 minutes, right? For you to then be shown above the fold and for you to then like be told, you know, like be talked about to the bigger group of and the audience and the crowd that comes from them. Very similarly in equity crowdfunding, you have got to build that momentum really fast, because if that momentum doesn't happen, then everyone's kind of like, I don't believe in this company either. On WeFunder, so we ended up raising on WeFunder. And in the first week, it's actually really cool. So they do a private week where people can invest, but the number doesn't get shown on your page. So again, with my marketing PR brain on, right, I got all of my friends to front load the investments, right? And then the number was coming. So we started our campaign Friday night, 8 p.m. So the number was coming next Friday, 8 p.m. And so on Wednesday, Thursday, I start getting on social being like, hey guys, guess the number. Let's do Price is Right rules, right? Like you got to guess the number, don't go above, blah, blah, blah. And like, I started tagging people and like getting the hype going and blah, blah, blah. And then I did hint, the average raise for the first week on WeFunder is $38,000. So I was like trying to anchor them too. I was like, all right, what do you think? Do you think we made it? Do you think we went past it? Do you think we hit it? So it was causing all that. And again, that's what you're doing throughout the day, right? It's like you're just building the buzz and getting people really comfortable with your company or with you or with equity crowdfunding. That was another thing. You have to educate people about what equity crowdfunding is. It's still new. So anyway, so Friday, 8 p.m., cat's out of the bag. We had raised $138,000. So $100,000 passed. Yeah. Which again, exactly, that's the reaction I'm going for, which is all of these investors now know, oh, wow, the average is 38. They crushed it. What's happening here? Let me explore more. Who are these people? What, right. You know, so, and then we also had a football player from the Atlanta Falcons, like just randomly invest on equity, like on our platform, on our page. So then we got some press out of that. That kept the ball rolling. And then we were able to raise $1 million within 2 months and $1.7 million in 3 months. So our campaign was really fast, and only about 2% of companies, and I think this is a 2019 statistic, so this might have gone up, but it's a very small group of us that hit the million.
To my question earlier about whether or not equity crowdfunding can help women and people of color reach communities that are especially excited to support them. Did you find that in your own experience? And did you do anything to try to foster that? Were you reaching out to those communities, and how were you doing it?
Yeah, exactly. So I was going out to like angel groups that were full of like specifically for women. I was doing a lot of press, like, you know, very like let's invest in women kind of focus type press. And I went on the Latina angle. I went on the Miami angle. We had a lot of investors from Miami because the Miami community had supported us so much. Like when we first started, I was getting free office space and like my friends were like giving us like free access to their resources. And this was actually a way for me to be able to say, hey, I wasn't able to put you on my cap table for the $1,000 that you wanted to give me, but now I can. Right. And so it was a Miami story. It was a woman story. It was a Latina story. It was, I mean, and again, this was 2019. This was before the pandemic. So it was like a keep families connected story, which really we ended up with a lot of our investors actually becoming customers. Like we ended up with, so my core customer is a glamorous grandma, or fabuela in español, abuela fabulosa. And there's a lot of 50 to 70 year old glammas out there who are like, I think this is really cool. I want to invest in a woman of color. And I have $500 that I can give her. And I also have this pain point. I can't wait to be a customer. I can't wait to tell everybody in my card game group. I can't wait to tell everyone at my church at the barbecue that I'm an investor. I made an investment. I invested in a woman. I invested in a company and now I use their product and it's so cool. And all my grandma friends are using it. Like that's just such a different story than getting an investment from someone on Sand Hill Road.
Right. Totally. Well, and this makes me really understand, I'm sure, why that person who had originally suggested equity crowdfunding to you said you're so perfect for it, because you have a product that people can immediately understand and can get behind. And then there's the story and who you are. And so there's just a very ready-made audience of people who are excited to be exactly that, be along with that kind of journey that you're talking about, right? Going, and it's less exciting to go to the party and say like, I just invested in this company that you will never understand what they do, right? Like, yeah. Some weird fintech thing. You've never even heard of fintech, right? But like, so when you are talking to people about equity crowdfunding, like what's the filter that you use to say, I think that it would be good for you and maybe it would be harder for you?
Yeah. So when I'm advising founders, and again, I think I've been successful if I talked you out of it because it wasn't the right fit for you, as much as I feel successful if it is the right fit for you and you go after it. I definitely think B2C companies have a much easier time on equity crowdfunding because, again, you're so used to speaking in marketing terms versus sales terms, right? Because you are really trying to get that one person. So I think that helps. I think also anything that's like consumer, again, tends to do better because you as a person know that pain point or you know someone with that pain point versus like, we're the back end for like medical billing. And, you know, it's like, okay, I don't really understand that. And yes, they're generating revenue, but like, can they do, you know, like you just don't have benchmarks for it. I think with consumer, you end up being like, oh, okay, I can see how this grows. I can see how this scales. I can see how they win. And I think that, so for example, microbreweries tend to do really well in equity crowdfunding because they come with a very warm crowd. So back to the crowd, right? You may have a million Twitter followers, but if they are posting about how cute you look in your bathing suit or like, oh my God, looks, you know, like it's such a beautiful background. Like they're not equity investors, right? Like if you have a warm crowd, even if it's a smaller crowd on social or a customer base or people. So I'll tell you how we built our crowd, by the way, because hopefully this is helpful to someone.
So
in 2017, I was bootstrapping the company and I bootstrapped by doing pitch competitions. Again, we're a consumer company. As you can tell, I have no stage fright, love to talk. So I would just get on these stages. I would just show up in these like random places around the country and I would be in pitch competitions. And so every time I was at a pitch competition, I would LinkedIn connect with the judges, right, who were on stage, which then you can get their emails. I would get the emails of the people that I met at that event. And so I was building a list of people that eventually in 2019, I could very quickly go to and say, hey, you've been hearing about Caribou for the past 2 years. Do you want to actually like get involved? I mean, think of, and also this is a group of people that have been following our journey. So it's not like I just met them 2 weeks ago and I'm like, we're going to do amazing things. I mean, these are people who I said, we're going to do amazing things. And I did it.
The powerful thing about what you just said there is how you are defining crowd and audience in a different way than most people think. Most people think of crowd and audience as followers, as people with very loose ties that you've collected on social platforms. But these people all right, so fine, you connected with them on LinkedIn, but the point of it wasn't LinkedIn. The point of it was the email address that you then got afterwards, right? And so you were able to connect with them, and now they're in a spreadsheet somewhere on your computer, and you are able to stay in touch and keep those connections really warm. I just want to emphasize that, because that is such a different way of thinking about building an audience than what most people do.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that I talk to founders about is I'm like, this might be right for you, but if you haven't built that warm crowd, take the time. Right? Don't launch your equity crowdfunding campaign in a month if you don't have that. Like, say you're going to do it, like decide to do it in 6 months and really focus on building that warm crowd and show them that you're doing the things you say you're going to do. And then in 6 months, when you launch your campaign, they'd be happy to invest.
Awesome. So Max, all right, I think that part of what you just said there answers the way that I wanted to conclude this, which was to ask you, what if somebody's listening to this right now and thinks, yeah, maybe this is a good solution for me, what are the first things that they should do to figure out if that is true or not? Aside from, you know, call you.
Yeah. I know, I need to start a consulting practice. For one, learn as much as you possibly can about it, right? Read the articles. There's a great startup called King's Crowd. It's kind of like the Moody's so it's like a rating agency for equity crowdfunding platforms. They've got a lot of great articles and they're very not, you know, kind of, they're not biased. I would also get to know, so there's about, I think, 60 portals that are allowed to run equity crowdfunding campaigns. The top three, which again is their top three just because they have the most investors and the most money invested on their platforms. And again, it is a numbers game, is I would start talking to WeFunder, Republic, and StartEngine. I would start talking to their teams, getting to know them, really understanding what the differences are. And also, as you start to get to know them, they have to do their due diligence on you. You've got to start building out your campaign. So the earlier you can get those conversations started, the better. And they can also help guide you. So even if you decide to do it in 6 months, they can be your partners in that. I would say also start building that crowd, right? Again, a warm crowd, really focus on that. And then I would say also start building the validation around your company. So we had been building this for a long time. In 2019, when I showed up with my page, I was able to be like, we've been, you know, featured on all these TV shows and gotten all this great press and we've won all these awards and we were in these accelerators. Like, that again doesn't happen overnight. So if you don't already have that, start thinking about in the next 3 to 6 months, what can I have on there? Because it's, again, just validation and social proof for someone who doesn't know you, who's coming onto a page and saying like, do other people believe that they can do it? And then do I believe that they can do it? And then I would just say block off, like, just make sure that you have 20 hours a day to do it.
Right.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.